talking about last night's game. The Montreal Canadiens tie their series with the Vegas Golden Knights. We'll talk to Louis-Jean from TVA at the bottom of the hour. We'll also talk about the Carolina Hurricanes re-upping with their bench boss. Yes, Rod Brindamore re-signs with Carolina. It is a three-year deal at well under market value for Brindamore. We'll tell you why he did this one. And also the NHLPA player poll is with some interesting results to see how the players evaluate one another. Meanwhile, Anthony Stewart, Justin Bourne, good afternoon, gentlemen. Before we get to the newsy bits and the PA poll and all that, and Justin will give you the first swing at this pinata, Montreal 3, Vegas 2, and once again, is Lady Luck shining on the Habs vis-a-vis top centerman, whether it's John Tavares, whether it's Mark Scheifele, and now Chandler Stephenson. What's yeah, like Spinal Tap drummers.
Do we know how long Stevenson's out for?
I don't know.
Yeah, that's nice. A nice little gift, though, isn't it? but yeah, to Montreal's credit, like I have found that throughout this these postseason games, at the start of hockey games, when I've expected really great pushes from teams against Montreal, it's Montreal has mounted them. Like, I thought this is a big chance for Vegas. Take their two games at home and pretty much kill the series. Like, you didn't think Montreal was going to beat them 4 out of 5. And Montreal came out unbelievably just flying. They dominated that first period. Probably should have led by more than they did. I give them full credit. This team is revved up and ready to play the second the puck drops.
Stewie.
Yeah, they're playing like true underdogs, and people never thought they thought that they were going to get ran out of the building both games. They've led, both games in hits. So they're just paying attention to those little details. I think they got to obviously fix, those details on faceoffs, even though they're leading in those categories in both games. So they're just, playing the exact way that they did the last two series, playing to their strengths, getting in on the forecheck, second and third opportunities on Marc-Andre Fleury, and bottom six scoring. And that's a key to the playoffs. And, people were sort of calling out that third line that they wanted more. Anderson had a good game. He was getting in on the forecheck, negating a couple ices. Armia scored a goal. Perry was doing Perry things too. So that's the true sign of a team. And I know it sounds repetitive, but, for people to think it's just going to come in and be an easy sweep, you don't get to the semifinals by not being a decent team. So, Carey Price wasn't heavily relied upon like he was game one, but he had a great game as well too. So, they're right back into the series, and don't be surprised if they steal another game in Montreal.
Did it feel like almost, there are just some games where you feel like no matter what the other team's going to do, you're going to have luck on your side. We don't like to talk about luck a whole lot because how do you quantify it? Like, what do you do with luck? It's this sort of great unknown. But, there's last night, Max Pacioretty thought he had one, rings it off the post. Okay. The Martinez shot, which eludes everything except for the pants of Carey Price, goes off the side of his pants. Then there was the Nicholas Watt chance towards the end of the second as well. Did it not seem, Justin, like once Montreal got that two-goal lead, Armia and Toffoli now riding an 8-game point streak, that this is just the way it was going to end and there were going to be bounces that were going Montreal's way and there was no way to explain it?
Well, we've just seen Montreal throughout the playoffs. When they get up a goal or two, it seems like it's dead. And that doesn't mean that they control the run of play after that. It just means they have Carey Price playing the way he is. I don't know how many goalies in the world get their pants over there the way Carey Price did, to make that save. But, Vegas poured it on that third period. They, heavily outshot, yeah. Outchanced, out high danger chanced them in the third period. But Carey Price is still there. So it's a matter of, teams figuring out to a way to match Montreal's pace in the early part of the game. If you hang with them long enough, you can beat them. I think they've won 7 of their last 8 games. Now the Canadiens, the only one they lost, they didn't score first. So that seems to be the recipe.
But I'm not a hockey historian, but doesn't luck go into it? And I'm trying to think of a Stanley Cup winning team that's gone through it and just sort of mopped the floor with all 4 rounds. So it's a little bit of luck. You got to have some luck on your side, too. And you know, you look at a player like Gallagher after the game, just bleeding. It just seems every game he's like one of those, you know, old school wrestlers that cuts himself just to show that he's, you know, putting on a show. That is the sign of a guy that's ready to go to battle, and that's what it takes. So I love seeing those little details because it's definitely great to watch.
I'll tell you one thing Montreal did early in this game and kept it that way was they took the fans out. Like every time they did a cutaway to the fans, every time you had contacts with the fans, I mean, you're expecting T-Mobile to be the corket of a champagne bottle. It was not that yesterday. At times it was, certainly on close chances. After Petrangelo scored his second, that face-off play, again, as Stewie referenced, in the third period to make it 3-2, they came alive. But by and large, Justin, man, like the Habs took the fans out, took them right out of the game.
Yeah, they've defended so well, and I think that's part of it, right? Just you get the lead, and then you don't give up a ton the other way. You know, they do feel like they're holding on at times, but it's not like the crowd has that front running fun loving energy because they're chasing the game from the beginning. And it is interesting because Vegas has had that advantage throughout this postseason. To neutralize that is pretty big. Going to be curious to see now what it looks like and feels like back in Montreal because Vegas hasn't had to deal with no fans for quite a while now. Well, minimal fans.
Yeah, Montreal, they play 5-card 21 hockey, where some of the other teams, the high-flying, want to go blackjack right off the bat. But, you know, you look at, you know, players like Shea Weber just blocking shots. And, you know, as big and strong as the forwards are on the Vegas Golden Knights, you know, Montreal doing a good job holding the fort and, you know, getting back and retrieving pucks and keeping it simple and going on the wall. You saw the Byron goal. When's the last time you saw a D-to-D chip up the wall, double chip for a breakaway? I don't think I've seen that since minor hockey was back two years ago. So they're just playing the game the right way. And I always say it sounds repetitive, but if you're a team that doesn't have that grade A talent, you have to take a page out of the book and rely on systems. Systems can win you a cup. I know it's not fancy. I know it doesn't put butts in the seats, but those systems, that's the beauty of hockey that I love watching and analyzing for sure.
You're a coach after all. I'll tell you what, I'm glad you, so no surprise, like, hey, I want to see the system. I'm glad you mentioned Paul Byron there. Because to me, he's one of the more intriguing players on the Montreal Canadiens. It seems as if every turn, everybody's looking for a reason to keep him out of the lineup. Oh, well, just, you know, scratch Byron and put this guy in. Just move Byron out. And all Byron does is go out there and score huge goals. Blazing speed. That goal yesterday makes it 3-0, and you say to yourself, this game is over. Like, doesn't it feel like at every single turn, they're looking for a reason why he can't play, and he keeps proving to them that he can? Does that make sense, Justin?
It's teams that make runs in the postseason tend to have those guys farther down the lineup who can do something if they get a chance. You know, I always flash back to, you know, Max Talbot scoring 2 goals in Game 7 for the Penguins, but that exists on a lot of good teams farther down the lineup. You get guys from goals from guys who you don't go into the series saying, we're going to need something from Byron, but they're able to give it to you in bits and pieces, and man, he showed up at a couple key moments in them for the postseason so far.
Yeah, and just going back to words about Bieksa saying that they're a playoff team, he's a playoff-type player, and you know, listening to his post-game, you know, interview. He's bilingual, too. He's got some good French there for a guy from Ottawa. That's great.
I want to get your thoughts on Alex Petrangelo as well. The second goal, the set play, the face-off goal. We are seeing a lot of set play, face-off goals. Somewhere Jay Woodcroft smiles at that statement. But Alex Petrangelo's first one, just the, I don't know how many bodies were in front of Carey Price, and he did not see it until it bounced off of him and then went past him. A big game, again, from Alex Petrangelo, big-ticket free agent they brought in last season, as we all know. Do we have a thought on Petrangelo from last night, who seemed to bring it maybe more than any other of the Vegas Golden Knights?
Yeah, I just love that a guy who took you know, a big contract like that, had a lot of pressure on him, is showing up when the games really matter. You know, part of why you get a guy like that is he's played in big games, right? He's been a leader, and he knows what it feels like, and he knows how to rise to the occasions, and certainly has been giving them all they've expected out of that money they spent on him. So, gosh, the pass he made to Martinez on the back door might have been nicer than either one of the goals he scored. So, tons of exceptional play from him. You know, it just feels right now that Vegas's D are carrying the the brunt of the offensive load. You know, whether it's him or Theodore or Martinez, these guys are making plays. I can't think of much on the offensive side of things where I say the forwards have been good. Like, where's Jonathan Marchessault? You know, he had one shot last night.
Where's Riley Smith? Where's Carlson? Like, keep going. Yeah. Like, that doesn't sound. We keep talking about how amazing Alex Tuch's been. Sorry, go ahead, Stewie.
No, I was going to say just about with Pietrangelo, and there's a common term that people say, you got to build your game, keep building. And, you know, he's putting 7 shots a game on net the last couple of games. And, you know, after game one, they're like, oh, he didn't put up a point. But he was just continually slowly building his game. And it would start with the hit. Then it would start, you know what, let me just put a puck on the net. So when you start doing those little details, the game starts to open up for you and you get some open looks. And, you know, for Montreal now, like these faceoffs now, that's 4 out of, you know, I think 6 goals that Vegas has scored in the series come off of D-zone faceoffs. And, you know, where I'm from and when I play, that's costing somebody their jobs, whether that's a player, whether that's, you know, Zygmantas, the face-off coach. You got to figure that part out, because if any couple more of those go in, that can cost you the series. So I don't know, getting shot lanes, yeah. But Pietrangelo is playing some great hockey, 28 minutes. And I think I was quoted as, you know, whoever was going to pick this guy up in free agency, he was going to help put them over the top. He is that good. He's a top defenseman in the league, and he's helping put the Vegas Golden Knights over the top in these playoffs.
He's been exceptional. We probably should have the face-off conversation here. There has been a turning of the tide in the last, what would you say, Justin, decade, maybe 15 years. I don't know how far back I want to go with this one, on the value of face-offs. There are some that are very much in the camp of it is a very important skill. You need to be better than 50% as a team on face-offs, so you don't have a prayer. Others look at face-offs as just one part of a chain leading up to an event, and we shouldn't give primacy to any one part of that chain. Where do you fall on that spectrum of how important are face-offs, or even are they?
Well, I think they're very important. It's what I did for the Marlies, you know, after every game, was analyze the face-off plays and look for trends, and it's something I think are very important. I think the most important part is face-offs are only important, or only really crucially important, in the end zones and when they're lost, won or lost, 100% cleanly. Like, it's not a huge deal if you kind of lose a draw after 4 seconds of a tie-up and everyone's kind of shifted around, but a clean loss in the D-zone is significant. And so you get a lot of stats that tell you, well, you know, you look at one face-offs in the O-zone and they only result in XYZ and they're not a big deal. It's wrong. It's wrong because it's the clean face-off wins and losses you have to avoid. And all of these goals we're seeing are just right back to their own teammate. And I think in the D-zone, centermen need to do, it's an important thing that you at least tie up the stick and delay a loss if you're going to lose it.
Yeah, and you can put it on the wingers about not getting in the shot lane, but if you lose it clean, there's nothing you can really do. And usually those 1 or 2 seconds when it's not one clean, you have a chance to get in the lane. Sometimes it's not even about blocking the shot. It's just being a deterrent, because if you're in the lane, most defensemen, they're not going to put the puck on net because it's going to hit you in your shin pads and go the opposite way. So that was something that coaches used to always stress, Guy Charron, Craig Ramsey, just do not lose it clean. Try to find a way to get a stick, and then just, you know, get a delay there. So it's a small detail, and it makes a big difference. It's, you know, costing Montreal some big goals. That should have been an easy win last night that they cruised to, and it made it a lot harder than it should have.
Let me ask you, Justin, let me ask you further to your previous employment with the Marlies and talking about face-offs. Let me ask you hockey geek question number 3,422 that I've ever asked you. What is more important, or what do you think, sorry, what is more valuable in the offensive zone, winning a face-off clean or losing the draw but forcing a turnover down low?
Well, more important would be winning it clean. I think you're actually in position to create an offensive opportunity. I think within 10 seconds of a clean one draw, the amount is like the shot rate in that time is huge. If, you know, losing a draw is not a crisis if you have jumping wingers and you can get in on the puck and stop the other team from breaking the puck out, you know, you're in a pretty good position at that point. And I know the case is made with a lot of teams is, should you just plan to lose the draw? You know, should you just send your guys willingly lose the draw, have them on top of it, and kind of slow the puck down, maybe work on Ozone possession from there? But as you've seen from these playoff games, the opportunity to actually create something with solid possession from above the goal line, I mean, it's just, it's too big an advantage, in my opinion, to punt on for the chance just to slow down the puck in the offensive zone.
Just so our listeners have an idea of what the philosophy behind this is, the theory goes that in the offensive zone, again, if you have wingers that can really jump fast and can force a turnover, it is advantageous, some believe, to deliberately lose the draw because the puck will turn over closer to the net than if you win a faceoff clean, which puts the puck at a very low percentage area to create offense, namely the blue line. I don't know many coaches, Stewie, you're a coach, how comfortable you would be in the offensive zone sending your center out there and saying, lose this deliberately. But the philosophy goes, in that situation, your wingers become more important than the center.
Yeah, they say that, then contract kind of time comes up and saying, oh, you're only 41% in the dot, and meanwhile, 10% is out because... And again, it's a big, big detail, and there's only a finite number of guys in the league that really pay attention to that. And I remember in the OHL, that's why they probably put me on the wing, because I would be in my D zone, and I would actually tap the puck behind the guy and, you know, quote unquote, lose it on purpose and then try to go on a breakaway. So that sometimes ended up in the back of my net too. But it's those details. It's in playoffs, the microscope shifts a little bit harder on that.
It does. Okay, so more on this series, the bottom of the hour with Louis Jean from TVA. A couple of news and notes from around the NHL. The Leaf note, which goes back to yesterday, Jason Spezza is back again with the Toronto Maple Leafs. It is a $750,000 contract, and he said if he could, he would take less. Man, that is playing the media and the fans like a fiddle. Well done, Jason Spezza.
Just a Sportsnet knows I too will work for less than $750,000 if we want to get closer to that.
But just a shade underneath seven. Borneo will come in for $745,000, $746,000, but nothing less than that.
What was it Joe Thornton used to do? Take an extra .2 for the boys? Isn't that the story I heard? Like where he would settle on a number and then tell the team, okay, now I need an extra .2 for the boys because he's going to pick up the tab all season for the boys when they go out to the bar.
I didn't know that, really.
I forget where I heard that story.
That surprises nobody. Yeah. That surprises nobody. Players are getting goofy. Look, I know Judd Moldaver, when he does deals, he always includes the player's number. Like Austin Matthews has 34 in his. Roman Josi has 59 in his as well. It's almost like become the Judd Moldaver Wasserman signature.
Can I tell you what I think of that?
What do you think of that, Justin Bourne? I'm sure you have a thought.
I think it reflects a lack of seriousness from the general manager's part on the importance of the salary cap. And if you're able to just fritter away money like that, I don't know. I don't like it, Jeff.
Could you imagine Berkey asking Berkey, hey, I'm number 66. Can I get $6,666,000?
Yeah, you'll get your worth and nothing more.
You're a devil. You're get out of here.
Well, what it used to be is you... What it used to... clowning around. Oh, I love it, Stewie. What it used to be, Stewie, as you all know, is guys would always have their numbers as the last four digits of their cell phone, right? You'd be like 2424, right? Or 1818. That's what they would insist on. How many guys have we seen that? Now it's give it to me in the contract. That's what
weird.
I want.
Weird.
Anyway, I don't know if that's just a Moldaver thing.
Darren Ferris has the best phone number of all time, by the way.
What is it?
Go ahead, Stewie. Make Let's Darren change his phone number now, Stewie.
Yeah, right. He's had that since I played. I was 15, so he's had that for over 20 years.
That's wild. What do we think of the Spezza deal? Borny, start with you.
That's great. Here's, you know, just because everyone is saying it's great, it's awesome, I'll say one other thing. Just what, you know, they are making a decision about how they're going to build that fourth line when you sign Jason Spezza, and it's very different from the fourth lines we see having success in the postseason right now, whether that's the identity line on the Islanders or, you know, Reeves and Kolesar and Tuck or whoever it is on Vegas. Like, it's very different if you want to have a skill guy there. Now, he's been amazing in the playoffs, and you should have good players on your team who don't cost much money. He's been amazing 2 years in a row in the playoffs. So, awesome deal. I love it. They absolutely should do it. But it is, once again, making a statement about how the bottom of your lineup is going to look, which is quite different. We haven't seen that have success in the past. Mm-hmm.
Stewie.
Yeah, there's another saying in the league. It says, know your role and outgrow your role. And I think he outgrowed that role, where I think he's now sort of analytically restricted just with his minutes. And he's a guy making the most, putting up 30, 35 points with 10 minutes a night. Why not try to bump him up to 12, 13 minutes to see what he can do? I know he's a little bit long in the tooth, but I imagine now in some of these games where you're down a goal or you need a big goal or you need put somebody on the bottom line. Why not give him some big minutes with some of the big boys to see what he can do? He's earned it over the last 2 years, showing he can make the most out of nothing. Give him a little bit more, see what he can do. So that's my Christopher Stee grant for the day, free Jason Spezza. But it's great to see those guys earn those contracts, and he's definitely earned it, and he's proven that he's still a good player in the National Hockey League.
It's 20 years in the league, Stewie. 20 years, and you want to bump this guy's minutes up more?
Why not? He's one of those guys. And I train doing Olympic lifts, and it's so hard. But he's been doing Olympic lifts when he's such good shape, and he works on his craft where, he'd be on the ice with Yari every other day, where I'm like, you know what? I'm not coming today. I'm going to go work on, my arm curls at the bar. But he's one of those guys that just puts work into his craft. And it's not by accident. He's very, very talented. But he's one of the hardest working guys. He knows his body. He treats it as a temple. It's no surprise that he's still playing 20 years later.
The other headline around the NHL happened this morning after the Carolina Hurricanes called the news conference for 11 o'clock Eastern with Don Waddell and Rod Brindamore. Canes general manager Waddell announcing a 3-year contract extension for Rod Brindamore, who may just win the Jack Adams. And Elliot has been consistent in his reporting that the sticking point here for Rod Brindamore hasn't been his compensation, which comes in well below, really by any standard, you would pay a coach like Rod Brindamore, especially someone that's a Jack Adams finalist and may win the entire thing. Elliot's reported it's something in the area of 1.8.
No,
which is,
really?
Yeah, he's put that number out there before.
Who's his agent?
I don't know, but here's the thing about Brindamore. Like, it seemed as if it was Carolina or I'm not coaching for Brindamore. Like, he never seemed to want to create a marketplace for himself. Like, I wonder if the Rangers kind of didn't do Gerard Gallant for as long as it took because they were waiting to see what was happening with Rod Brindamore. I would imagine there might have been some other teams that even already have head coaches that were waiting to see what Brindamore's decision was going to be, but he was pretty much consistent. Like, you're going to get me under market value because this is where I want to be. This is where I want my family to be. The only thing I want is for everybody around me to be taken care of, and that's trainers and equipment managers, to say nothing about people on the bench. The only one person who was told he could look elsewhere was Dean Chenault. I believe everybody else, and that's got to be probably a dozen people, we're taking
care of. Can I talk about
Brindamore
for a minute here? And he's almost like Ben Affleck in Good Will Hunting, where he was just like hanging out at the arena. He'd be working out. He'd be on the bike with the boys. And then he was assistant coach, eye in the sky. And, I remember my year there, we had to do the Rod Brindamore stair climb every other day. We had to run the entire stairs from bottom to top, I think, nonstop for 30 minutes. And Rod Brindamore would be doing that with a 20-pound vest on. So I'm literally, I made it up and down. The goal was 11 times or 12 times. I did like 4.5. I'm taking a nap and going to get a coffee at the snack bar. And just then he was the eye in the sky. Yeah, you know what? I don't really want to travel. Then he just slowly, fell in love with it. And he is inbred, with the Carolina lifestyle. He loves it. He's, that's his home. So I'm not very, very surprised that he's not very influenced by money, but he's a great guy, and he's one of the great young minds in the National Hockey League for sure.
Also, the type of house you can buy in Carolina with a 1.8 million,
you should have saw my house.
Four in Manhattan.
Ooh, I had an estate. My rent was like $1,400. I'm like, I should buy this place. I'm like, $400,000. A little too rich for my blood. Escrow.
6 acres.
Yeah, 6 acres.
It's to me, this is a testament of the guy that is obviously happy there, wants to stay, and just wants to keep everyone together and look after everybody. And considering the year that we all just went through, isn't that one of the more noble things we've seen in a contract, where sort of everybody's scrambling to take care of themselves and just their security? Like, if it wasn't going to be a deal for everybody around him, like, Brendan Moore's not doing this deal.
That's great. It's awesome.
Like, you say that, but then the NHLCA says, hey, what's going on here? Because now that influences the rest of the market. So I'm sure he doesn't really care, but it does have some influence for some of the other coaches now, because now Seattle, that number probably got a little bit lower on whoever they're going to be hiring. And so it's going to have
to talk. It just got docked $500,000 a year. Thanks, Rod. Thanks for taking care of everyone.
Mike Bellucci thought he was going to ring the bell on his first deal with Seattle. Thanks very much, Rod. But I wonder, too, because, you know, we just went through that era. Call it the Babcock era, if you want. I mean, Joel Quenneville, Alain Vigneault, Claude Julien. Like, we saw coaches make a lot of money. There's no salary cap for coaches. We all know that. But I wonder if this is a little bit of a course correction for that position. Like, I know you only need one team to get a little bit goofy and will overspend to get the coach that they think is going to put them over the top because of, you know, what a playoff run can do for your franchise. But do you think we're entering an era now? And Brendan Moore is going to be a huge talking point for it. Tom Dundon always felt that coaches are paid too much money in the game right now. Do you think that we're entering an era where, you know, as Joe McGrath once said, the number becomes a little more reasonable?
No. I think this is like when teams bring up the Mitch Marner contract or whoever in future negotiations, and other teams are just going to say, that's an outlier. Like, I think this is going to be an outlier. Like, this is like, that was a unique circumstance. He wanted to be there. That was his family. That's not actually what coaches are worth. I think there are some contracts that are so too many standard deviations from the norm to be considered a part of comparables. And this would be one that they just strike away as not comparable.
Yeah, and, you know, people say players don't play for the money, and that could be debatable. But I think a lot of these coaches, they coach because it's almost like an illness where it's on your mind 24/7, and obviously there's a business side to it, but it's on your mind. And me as a minor hockey coach, that's all I think about. So it's pretty standard, but I don't think the number's really going to come down that much too, because the market's been set and there's going to be some great coaches that are still available. So I think if you want to sway them to their to your respective club, you're going to have to put some money on the board for them to get them over there.
Do we have a quick thought as we go to break here on the Jim Gregory General Manager of the Year Award nominees? Marc Bergevin, Montreal. Lou Lamoriello, New York Islanders. He won it last year. And Bill Zito, the rookie of the bunch with the Florida Panthers. Do you have a thought on this one, Justin?
Yeah, they should either vote on it after the regular season or after the Stanley Cup final. Why would it be after two rounds and just be influenced by a couple of series?
I don't disagree at all.
Like, pick a direction. Is it regular season, or are we going to... Because, I mean, this just feels taken small samples into way too heavy into account here.
There is a thought out there, or there is a theory, that the General Manager of the Year award should be handed out when the Stanley Cup is handed out, and whoever wins the Stanley Cup, that GM wins the award. That the GM of the Year award is
no,
the Stanley Cup.
This is
unless
when they
there's
should
injuries,
give it up,
though.
They should give it on July 2nd. So now it forces all the GMs to go crazy on July 1st and make all the deals that they can and sign it. And whoever signs the most money contracts for a term, they win GM of the year. Everybody wins.
Handed out by Sportsnet for the entertainment value.
Well, it is
we'll have
three,
our own.
You know, coaches that did, you know, three really the distinct things here, right? I mean, Bergevin, you know, thought that he had a brief window here in the North Division and sort of went all in and put in the chips and took a team that people thought were, you know, and well, we look at the standings. I mean, they were, you know, from a points point of view, the worst team to make it into the playoffs, got them in, and they've won a couple of rounds. Lou Lamoriello had a really good trade deadline, but pretty much stayed the course and kept an elite-level team. And Bill Zito finally got, even though they flamed out in the first round, underachieving Florida Panthers team into the playoffs, finally. So where do you put value?
Yeah. No, that's an important question and something we should probably assess.
Three very distinct things. This is always the tricky one for me. The GM, we're like, how do you award it? Yeah. Like, what's your criteria for the GM of the year?
Yeah, it should probably be after the whole of the playoffs when we've had some time to sit back and assess. Like, if Montreal goes out and gets shelled three straight games, they lose in five here. All they did was kind of, you know, they won a tight series against Toronto, beat a bad Winnipeg team with a hurt center, and then won a game against Vegas. And it's like, why'd we pick Montreal again? But you never know. They may win the cup yet and be validated. Who knows?
Sportsman.
Yeah. Sportsman. Give it to Bergevin so he can keep going crazy and get a lifetime contract with the Montreal Canadiens and make July 1st even more interesting.
More green coats for that man. Yeah. Hit a break. Speaking of Montreal, Louis Jean covers the Habs for TVA Sports. He joins us next. The Habs very much in this series. Thank you very much. All tied up at once after a 3-2 victory last night at T-Mobile. The venue shifts to the Bell Center. Louis Jean comments in moments. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We continue on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. This is Hockey Central. Welcome back to the program. Jeff Merrick alongside Anthony Stewart and Justin Bourne. It's Hockey Central. We're here Monday to Friday starting at noon. And we are pleased to be joined by Louis Jean. We stay on the Montreal Canadiens page. Louis, of course, from TVA Sports. He joins us now. Louis, ça va, mon chum?
Bonjour, messieurs. Comment allez-vous? Ça va bien. J'espère que vous autres, vous allez bien aussi. Life is good.
Okay, Keep going, man. It sounds great. Listen, that's the best anyone's going to sound on this show. We're all stepping on our tongues, and you come in sounding eloquent. And
you know, I'm actually shocked you guys called me back because, if you look at my predictions and, you know, I'm as shocked as anyone that this is going on right now in Montreal.
Hey, you want to look at predictions, my friend? You're looking at the guy that at the beginning of the season said Carter Hart's going to win the Vezina. So why don't we just park predictions here? Because I've had some doozies. Okay, how did you see last night's game? I mean, it was a very curious one. There were a lot of chances for Vegas. Some goalposts, great chances, all of it. I don't know that I even really have a handle on what happened yesterday, Louis. How did it come off for you?
It came off Montreal, first of all, having a really good start, which they need. Better than Vegas, to me. That's the first thing. And the second thing is essential to their success, and that is scoring first. And it's not so much about, and I know it's so cliche, but man, this really applies to the Montreal Canadiens. You know, they've scored first 10 times. They've won 9 games in the playoffs. Yeah. The biggest thing isn't so much, and you may say, well, wait a second, that's the same thing. So they've won 9 of 10 when they've scored first. But the big thing for them is that if they don't score first, they haven't won a single game. They're 0-4. So it's not about scoring first. Is you can't allow the other team to score first, or you're not going to win. So they play differently when they're ahead. They need to have that lead, because if they're chasing, if they're trying to force things, they don't look good. That's not how, you know, that doesn't maximize what they have as a team, the way they play and the way they want to box out and keep everybody on the outside, protect 31, make sure nobody gets to Price. And so it makes a huge, huge difference. And that really is the key, has been the key for Montreal. And I know, well, I mean, are they the same scoring first versus allowing the, like, I mean, it's not the same for Montreal. Bizarre, to say. But, I mean, it just gives this team tremendous confidence when they play with a lead.
Montreal has been leading in the faceoff department in both games, but they've had some breakdowns. I think on 4 of the 6 goals were on clean lost draws. Is that something that they need to address, or is it just chalk it up to bad luck and keep powering through?
No, I think it's something that I think they did a little bit better, but still, again, it's 2 goals yesterday, Anthony, and you're right. And you know what? It reminds me of a top prospects game in Quebec City, actually, the old Colisée. Years ago, and Pat Burns was there, Scotty Bowman was there coaching some of the kids. There is Michel Bergeron, who I work with, Bergie, and there was Jacques Demers. And I just remember, you know, we had a mic on Pat Burns, and he was at that point, his health was much better, and he was considering even coming back. He was trying to maybe come back as a head coach in the NHL. And so I was working for Sportsnet at the time, and we mic'd Pat Burns, and I remember, you know, going back and listening to the tape, and he's on the bench, and I can't remember with who the centerman is. So this is the top prospects game. You know, remember Patrick Kane is playing in that game. There's a lot of really elite players. And he said to the centerman on the bench, he said, listen, and you guys know, and Jeff, you know how important these games are in terms of, you know, the player's stock and draft and everything. And so he said to the guy, he said, listen, you don't have to win the faceoff, but you can't lose it. And I think that's what it is for Montreal at this point. if you're going to lose the faceoff, you know, if you can't win it, make sure you don't lose it. Get in the lane, block a shot, do something that will negate whatever the other team is trying to do offensively. And so I think that's where they are right now in terms of faceoffs, if that makes any sense.
So when the Montreal Canadiens sold Jeff Petrie's soul to have him reanimated and play in game two of this series, will he get that back later? Or I guess I want to know, like, do you have an update on Jeff Petrie? He played phenomenally despite turning into a literal zombie between games one and two.
Yeah, I think I can't really get into what that is, but I think it's a medical situation with his injury and that. But I was the same when I saw that. I was like, Satan, like, I mean, what's going on? I mean, he's a man possessed. Like, what is that? And I was sort of wondering, like, to me, you can't beat Vegas if Jeff Petrie isn't playing. He's that important to the Montreal Canadiens. And he played well. And I was also wondering, if he does play, what version of Jeff Petrie will you have? I mean, obviously, you know, with those two fractured fingers, displaced fingers, whatever it is, you know, he's not going to be able to have as much juice on the shot, perhaps, and all that stuff. But he was the same. Like, he played really well, just under 21 minutes, you know, right off the bat. First shift, he sends the puck towards net. You could tell he's there. He's exactly what you're going to need. He inspires that team. Even being in the warm-up, I mean, just the mind games that Montreal was clearly trying to play with Vegas. He wasn't on one of the pairings. So you're wondering, well, is he going to play? Is he not going to play? He's still on the ice right till the very end of the warm-up. So, you know, what's happening here? And in the end, of course, he suited up and he was very good. So, yeah, I'm not sure about the soul and all that stuff, but I know in terms of Montreal's soul as a team, he is so important. He just brings so, so much. And the thing is that the minutes that you take away from, you know, when Petrie isn't there, you're adding on to the Webbers and the Edmondsons and the Sherratts. And they don't have as much confidence in some of the bottom guys. So they need Jeff Petrie if they want to have any chance against the Golden Knights.
With Louis Jean from TVA, before we get back to the game last night and game three on the horizon, I want to get your thoughts on the Jim Gregory Award nominees today, General Manager of the Year. Lou Lamoriello, Islanders, Bill Zito, Florida Panthers, and Marc Bergevin of the Montreal Canadiens. I'm guessing, Louis, there were multiple points during this season where you said there's no chance that when the three nominees are named that Bergevin's going to be one of them. But here we are. Do you have a thought on that?
I do. You know, and I've said this on your show before, that I felt that Marc Bergevin, the work he did this year leading up to this season, was perhaps the best he's done since he arrived in Montreal. And then, of course, you know, they stumble and they look at times just disjointed and disorganized. And you get the sense this team is going nowhere. Like 3 weeks ago, you know, about 3 weeks ago, you know, you're wondering if Dominic Ducharme was coming back. You're wondering if Marc Bergevin still had a job. And now he's a finalist. He's a finalist as the GM of the award, the Jim Gregory Award. And, you know, he's done great work. And, you know, when you talk to some of his peers, when you talk to other GMs across the league, I did something with George McPhee months ago, and I asked him about Marc Bergevin. And, you know, he said he is the perfect man. He's so respected across the league, but he is the perfect person to run that team. He said, I would have complete confidence in him and the way he's building his team. I spoke to Larry Plow. I spoke to Jim Rutherford. I spoke to several GMs. The praise that they had for the work he does in a market that, as you guys know, is far from easy, and that's an understatement. And so for me, I think it has to be, to a certain degree, validation for him with what he's trying to do, because in this market in particular, you're always being questioned, doubted, and he built a team not so much for the regular season. He built a team, had something in mind in terms of being able to compete in the playoffs when it's so much tougher, when every inch needs to be earned. And so, you know, I kind of feel good for him, because I think at times it's been very, very trying, not just the last 9 years, but I think in particular the last few months. This year was very, very difficult for him. And so, you know, I feel that for him, this must be a sense of validation and comfort in at least maybe sometimes I'm being criticized or questioned a ton in this market, but maybe there's other people that recognize and see what I'm trying to do and what I've accomplished.
Vegas's top players have been struggling to score this series. The same was the case with the Winnipeg Jets and Toronto Maple Leafs. And the common denominator is Philip Deneau. How great of a two-way game is he playing? And what's his number going to look like next year? And is it going to be with Montreal?
I don't know. I really don't know. Those are very good questions. I don't know what the number is going to be because of the cap situation. He turned down a very big one as well for Montreal. I don't know if there's still going to be room, if they're going to be able to fit him in Montreal. And the one thing about Deneau is that he's just so good. He's so dominant. He's quiet in the way he approaches the game. But you look at the job that he's done shutting down players. You look at what others across the league say about how he is. You know, how difficult it is to approach him. And you guys remember, perhaps, I don't know if you remember reading this or seeing this, but months ago, it was Nathan MacKinnon. I think he was on Spit and Chicklets or you know, whatever it was. And he was asked about, like, who's the one guy that when you play him, you know you're going to have a tough night. You know it's just going to be difficult to produce and create offense. And he said, Philip Deneau. And I think that there's a lot of people that feel across the league that that's what he is. Now, the one knock on Philip is offense. He's very, very solid defensively. He will, he's going to be able to shut down the opposition. He is going to show up. He's his game. There's so many things to like about his game. But I sort of wonder about his renegotiation. I'm just curious to know how other teams and how even Montreal is going to look at this and approach this in terms of when you look at the offensive numbers, that's where you sort of scratch your head. Is he strictly a defensive centerman, or can he chip in with some points, with some goals from here, you know, here and there? And that's sort of the one thing that's lacking right now.
Heading into Game 3, how is the health of the Montreal Canadiens? I'm thinking about Shea Weber, who I thought had a broken paw, and then he took a couple of slappers yesterday, and obviously Petrie is one. Gallagher seems to be on the right track. Where are those guys at?
Yeah, there's a lot of walking wounds right now for the Montreal Canadiens. There's no question. And that's why, you know, to circle back on the Jeff Petrie thing, especially on the blue line, I mean, you're right. I was sort of wondering, we were all talking about, is Petrie going to play? I was wondering, is Weber going to be able to play at a good enough level? Is he going to be able to, you know, to sort of survive? And because that whack that he took on the hand, clearly he's not one to embellish. So you knew whatever that was, and it's on the injured hand, it wasn't good. So I think there's a lot of guys right now that that are hurt. There's a lot of guys on the other three teams right now that have got some bumps and bruises. But I think for me the biggest thing, and I don't know if you saw the scrum where Corey Perry is just is on the bottom of the he's on the ice and he's getting guys are taking shots at him because he's stirring the pot like he likes to do and he's done his entire career. But then there's Eric Staal that comes out of that scrum and he's giving it to the refs. I'm not saying just a little bit, he is irate. He's giving it to the official, to the ref that's standing right there. And to me, that sort of sums up what I see from this team right now. I see a group of players that just sense there's something special right now going on, sense that there's an opportunity, maybe for Eric Staal, who hasn't seen his wife and his kids in months. Like, he would have every reason just to pull the chute and say, listen, the other guys, they're just too good. They're too strong. Like, we don't really have a chance. But that's not what you're seeing. And that's the one thing that's probably impressed me the most about the Montreal Canadiens is that there's a lot of guys with the pandemic whose family is in the States right now. They're not here. They haven't been in Montreal or they haven't been, you know, with their spouses, these players or their family for months on end. And here they are. They're continuing to give it everything they've got. They are clearly united. They're playing like a team. They're sacrificing. They're blocking shots. And that sort of sums it up for me. And Carey Price, after the win yesterday, you know, he's talking to my colleague, Lou Lavoie, doing a post-game interview, and he said, I'm having the time of my life. I'm enjoying this, and we just want to keep on playing. That says a lot to me.
Pressure is a privilege, Billie Jean King. It's a wonderful quote, and it applies. Louis, always a delight when we get to catch up with you. Thanks so much. Enjoy the rest of the series, and we'll check back regularly. Thanks so much again.
Look forward to it. All the best, guys.
Thanks, Louis.
Louis Jean. from TVA breaking it down. I love athletes that can do that, that actually take a second and enjoy what is happening at the moment and not worry, not, you know, have this anxiety about chasing the next game and the next shift and all that, but just have the ability. And that's got to come with age. Man, I don't know any young people that can do that. I certainly couldn't when I was younger. I really admire players that can sort of pause and say, this is really fun. And have the latitude in the organization to have the nerve to say it, because as you guys well know, that is frowned upon. There's always another game to be anxious about. We'll hit a break. More Hockey Central in moments. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Welcome back to the program. A couple of minutes here. I want to remind you tonight, Hockey Central on the air 7:30 on Sportsnet. Ron McLean, your host. Puck drops at Nassau Coliseum. Justin Bourne. Just after 8 o'clock, it is Game 3, series tied at 1. Tampa Bay Lightning and the New York Islanders. Borny, will give you the floor first. What do you expect this evening?
Well, just pace and energy and excitement in the early going. It's one of those rare times where you say the favorite really has to weather the storm and just get through that early going. You know, if they can quiet the crowd down, maybe get the first one, Tampa, I mean, in the first, you know, before the Islanders can run away with this thing, they'll probably be all right. But I do expect there to be a blitz coming out of the gates.
Yeah, I expect them to come out strong and really park that bus, the Islanders, and take the time and space away from players, especially Kucherov, who had 3 assists. So they got to get a little bit tighter checking. And only 26 shots on Vasilevskiy. You want to beat one of the best goaltenders in the league, probably the best. You got to start firing 35-40 on them. So I know it's tough, but can do a bit of a track meet there.
You know, maybe the obvious answer, the obvious target is Patrick Maroon, but who do you guys think Islanders fans tonight get on the most? I mean, Islanders fans love to pick one and just pluck that note like a fiddle all night long. And the one thing we know about Islanders fans as well, wildly creative. Borny, you know that building, you know those fans. Your dad was an Islander, your father-in-law was an Islander. Who do Islander fans go at tonight?
Well, I'm going to give Islander fans credit and hope they don't waste their energy on a guy like Pat Maroon and hope it's like Kucherov or Vasilevskiy or one of those guys. I would lean more in that direction than a third, fourth line player.
Stewie, what do you think?
You stumped me. I usually got something witty, but I'm looking at it. I don't know. Maybe you say we got the better Russian goalie. I don't know. That's a lie. So I don't know.
Barclay Badgerow
or something like that. I don't know.
That's what it's going to be. I call it. Love it.
We'll find out tonight, 8 o'clock Eastern on CBC and Sportsnet, Game 3 between the Bolts and the Islanders, as we mentioned as well, 7:30. With your host, Ron McLean, it's Hockey Central, your pregame program before Game 3 at the Coliseum.